Welcome to Sox Talk on Air right here at SoxTalk.com. I'm Marius Gleiss coming to you from Chicago. And west of me, it is not Jason Gage. He is not here, perhaps thankfully. But it's Alex Ernst. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
And where are you from?
I am in Owan, Iowa, but don't worry, you've probably never heard of it. Just go with me being in northeastern Iowa today.
Northeastern Iowa, okay.
Yeah. A little known fact that Jason Gage was actually born in Iowa.
Wow.
I know. Feel free to hold that against him.
Well, you got to do a biography of him one time.
That's painful to do. The most common way I've heard him referred to is a California fruitcake, and I like that description of him. It fits him well.
Of course, I think Jason was in Cincinnati this over the past weekend to watch the Sox sweep the Reds, so he wasn't able to be on. So, but luckily, Alex was able to fill in, and who knows. You were just telling me before we actually started recording that you might be able to take either Jason's jobs or my job. So,
well, yeah, we were also discussing before the show. You know, I'm stepping in. This is kind of my first time. This kind of makes me the Chris Singleton of the show, and that makes you the Ed Farmer of the show. And I don't know how comfortable you are with that.
No, I'm very uncomfortable with that. Extremely uncomfortable.
Too.
All right. Well, the Sox 6-1 this week, and for those who have always listened, me and Jason have been pretty skeptical of the way the Sox have been playing this year. Even though they've had a good record, they really haven't been playing up to their potential, I would say. I think they've been winning more on talent alone. This week, though, watching them, it seems like that's starting to change. They went up against the Rangers and the Reds, two solid teams, and they seem to be a lot closer to last year's type of play this week. And it's not just because of the 6-1 record. I think it's just the way they've been playing. What have your thoughts about them as far as the entire season goes? Do you think they've been playing anywhere near they did last year?
No, of course not. I mean, this past week, you've had, I think, five games where you saw where the White Sox can really do. There's the first two games against Texas, the last game against Texas, and the first and last games of the series against Cincinnati. I mean, you saw two games in these past two series where they just flat-out stunk. The game where Vasquez just blew up against the Rangers, and then the second game of the series against the Reds where they got into a hole deep,
yes,
even though Contreras was pitching and they came back.
Yeah, they didn't play particularly well that game. The one thing that I did like about that game is that if you remember this team, you know, 2005 White Sox, what they did very good is they kept themselves in the games and they just waited for the other team to screw up. And that's really what happened Saturday because it was the Reds who gave away that game. So they just kind of hung in the game. Yeah, they just hung in the game just enough for the other team to make a mistake. And looking at the Reds' defense and hearing Hawk and DJ, apparently they've had a lot of troubles this year and it actually ended up working out for them in the end.
The most unbelievable part of that series, too, was that Adam Dunn appeared to be a great defensive left fielder. That was painful. I mean, Scott Podsednik, wow. He makes him look like, well, the Brian Anderson of the Reds outfield.
Yeah, well, I know Dunn did show a pretty decent arm. I know I've seen him a few times prior to the series, and he looked pretty bad out there. And I don't know if he might have, you could maybe even say that he was as bad as Podsednik has been this year.
And Well, you know how Jason talks about Podsednik being one of the three worst left fielders in all of baseball.
Yes.
I don't know if I had agreed with that, but I don't know. It's getting kind of close, and, you know, he's just making me uneasy when he's in the field out there. Thank God we've got Anderson now patrolling center.
Yeah. And I said this last week with Jason. Defensively, I think this year, I think he's been bad, and I'll agree with both you guys on that. And I think most Sox fans would say he's been horrible this year. I think last year, I think he was a solid defensive player, and I think that's really what Guillen more or less said the other day. He is not playing good defense at all, and that's why Mikoviak is coming in late in the games as a defensive substitution. So I think Podsednik does definitely have some issues out there, and you're right. Thankfully, Brian Anderson is going to be out in center field on a more regular basis, even though if he's going to sit a couple times a week for Mikoviak, if he's out there, you know, four games a week, five games a week, patrolling center field, you know he's going to be able to get the job done. And there was actually a play the other day, I don't know if you saw, I believe this was in the Red Series, where the ball was hit to left center field, Podsednik was under it, he was calling for the ball, and Anderson still was aggressive enough to get in front of him and make that catch. That's just what Anderson's going to bring you, is an aggressive guy who's going to try to take control of the outfield.
Oh yeah, you see that all the time out of Anderson, and I mean, even if you just watch routine catches in right center field or left center field, if Dye's there to catch the ball, Anderson is right there backing him up already.
Yeah.
I mean, he has no problem getting over to most balls that, admittedly, even Sox fans' god Aaron Rowan might not have gotten to.
So you would agree with, I mean, me and Jason, really, when you say Anderson, is he better than Aaron Rowan?
Oh, well,
based on the short time we've seen him?
Yeah, in the field, I think he is. he gets much better jumps than Rowan ever did. I mean, Aaron Rowan went balls out. I mean, he'd run after anything, yep. But Anderson, I just felt, has gotten much better jumps than Rowan ever has. And he doesn't have to exert himself any special way. He just gets to these balls easily, and it looks way too easy for him.
Now, speaking of the outfielders, I want to talk about Ozuna being in the role that he is. But before that, just this whole week, one thing I've liked about this team, I want to see if you've seen the same thing. Offensively, it seems like they're having better at-bats. I know offensively they put up some great numbers this year, but the one problem I always had this year is it seems like their bats were quicker. Their at-bats were quicker. They were getting quicker outs. They weren't able to go out there and do the little things. It seemed this week they've been a little bit better at that. They're a little more aggressive. The Pruszynski taking the takeout slide that he made at second base was just an example. I know Uribe tried a couple squeeze plays this week, a couple of suicide bunts. I do like to see that offense from last year. It seemed like it's a little bit more so this past week.
And it's nice to see the guys at the bottom of the order picking it up. You know, Uribe, I still think he's swinging the same way. I still think he's trying to go deep at every at-bat, but it seems like he's running into some doubles and home runs out there even. Anderson's been getting on base, and hell, it doesn't hurt when Garland goes deep.
that was a bomb, too, and that was a high fastball from Espanyol, so it's not easy.
That wasn't a cheapie.
No, that wasn't a cheapie, man. But going back to Uribe, I will agree, it does look like he's trying to pull the ball, but I will give him credit. He has been going to the opposite field a little bit more. A couple of his hits have come that way, so I think when Uribe starts doing it like so many hitters in the game, he starts going to right field, and he's in a better situation. And Anderson, it seems like ever since Guillen said that you are the starting center field, or at least for the most part you're going to be out there in center field, he's looked a lot more comfortable offensively. So hopefully that's a good sign. And really, if those two guys start playing, the only really guy in the offense who's struggling is Jim Thome right now.
Well, that and Scott Podsednik.
Well, yeah.
He's just looked horrid out there. And I mean, his defense in the field certainly hasn't helped. And again, that's why we're getting to Ozuna here in a little bit.
Yeah, and speaking of Ozuna, his role, he's been pretty much batting over 400 consistently all season long.
He's closing in on 450.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every single time he's playing, when he's starting, he's getting 2-3 hits a game. And when he's not, he's making things interesting. He's hustling. It's just adding a lot more energy to this club. However, he doesn't really have a set starting spot in this team, right?
I don't think so either. I mean, you'd think he'd be a natural second baseman or shortstop, and Iguchi's not going anywhere. And with Uribe picking it up lately, it's hard to find time for him in the infield. I don't like seeing him at third base, and that's a position better filled by Cintron or even Makoviak when Creedy's out. But we're starting to look at maybe he should get some more time in left field, because it's getting pretty hard to say that he's going to be much worse of a left fielder than Scott Podsednik is.
And the one thing about Ozuna is you could say he's never played left field before. Like you said, he's more of a second baseman or shortstop, so throwing him in left field, you have to expect he's going to struggle a little bit. And that's kind of why I really never got hard on him, because you never
he's
know.
Spunky.
What's that?
He's spunky, don't he?
But, I mean, it's just like when you put a guy like Loden in the outfield. It's going to take time for these guys who are not used to playing the outfield to actually perform. And even Makoviak, you know, Makoviak really was never a center fielder. He's more or less an infielder. He could play a little bit of the corner, but if you put him out in center field, especially here in Chicago with the wind, it's going to take him some time to adjust. So I think the same thing with Ozuna. In left field, he's going to struggle. But as you said, as bad as Podsednik has been defensively, Ozuna can't be much worse, considering the offense he's bringing you right now.
Yeah, that's one of the things Guillen has to weigh out, whether the drop-off in defense from Podsednik to Ozuna. It's hard to say that anybody's going to be a drop-off in defense in left field from Scott Podsednik. whether that's got to outweigh the offensive ability you're going to get from Pablo Ozuna. And that's the thing, when Ozuna comes back, you see he's getting timely at-bats. He gets on base when we need him to. And I don't know if I want to make this comparison, because I know especially some posters on Sox Talk hated him, but he might be this year's Timo Perez for the White Sox.
Ooh, I think he's better than... You know what? I really had no problems with Timo Perez. I think last year, a lot of people ripped him. I thought he was fine for a bench player. I thought he was an adequate bench player. You could have obviously have done better, but you could have done worse with him, too. I thought he was just a decent bench player. He did probably play a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But I thought he was a decent bench player. In Ozuna's case, the numbers he's putting up is ridiculous for a bench player.
Yeah, and that's why I'm hesitant to make the comparison, because Timo never did carry a bat as well as Pablo did. But the way I'm going with that is that Timo seemed to get hits when we needed him, and Pablo's doing the same thing. You see him getting on base late in the game. You see him getting that single late in the game, and he's always running hard, and you certainly can't fault this guy for effort.
No, without question. I think the one thing, maybe Perez had that stronger arm in the outfield, and he had a little bit more power. But defensively in the outfield, even though Perez was a natural outfielder and you would probably less make less mistakes than Ozuna, I would feel more comfortable with Ozuna because you know he's not going to half-ass it out there. And Timo Perez had a tendency to half-ass it. Maybe it was just his one-handed catch, I don't know, but he had a tendency to half-ass it out there a few times. So I would actually be more comfortable with Ozuna from an outfield defensive standpoint.
Has Timo been called up by the St. Louis Cardinals yet? I knew he was in the organization. Could this series coming up be the return of Timo Perez to the cell?
Ooh. He's going to show them what they're missing, I guess.
That's going to have to be something to watch for.
Well, we're gonna talk a little bit about the series later on, but the news from this week, the Sox traded David Rizky. They traded Lopez. I actually forgot his first name.
Javier
Lopez. He's a lefty. What is he, 28 years old? Really was never a prospect. More or less just a AAA minor leaguer who, you know, was a solid lefty, if anything.
Well, he wasn't a prospect in our organization. I thought that was pretty evident. I mean, you see all these guys passing him up for promotions, for bullpen help. You see Sean Tracy. You see Augustin freaking Montero. And, I mean, it was pretty clear that Lopez was never going to play for the White Sox. And, I mean, kudos to Kenny Williams. He saw that Lopez wasn't going to get called up, whether it was his decision or someone that, as a game, just didn't want the bullpen. And he turned him into someone who can be productive for the White Sox. I mean, I see David Rizky. He could fit into the Cliff Kolit role from last year.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty important role last year.
And you're going back to Lopez. I don't know, what's the correct term that they're using for the second lefty out of the bullpen?
Loogie?
Yeah, I really don't like that at all, because it seems like, you know, you go back 5-10 years ago, it seems like every team was looking for that one lefty reliever in the bullpen, and now it seems like teams need two lefties in the bullpen. I think when you're in the Sox case where you really don't have many relievers in general, outside of Jinx, nobody is really being consistent this year. You know, Costa has been decent, but nobody has really been reliable. You can't worry about having 3-4 lefties. You have to make sure that you get a right-handed reliever, and David Rizky is that guy. He pitched really, really well for the Indians for, what, 3-4 seasons, I believe? His ERA was roughly around 2-3. Solid numbers. From what I seen the other day, he looked like he was doing pretty good. So I think you're right. I think he can be that the Cliff Polito of last year and be that middle reliever guy who pitches in the seventh, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth inning. And then when Polito comes back, which we're going to talk about a little bit, you could put him in the back of the bullpen.
And plus, you know, I wish more people would feel with me on this, but I could really give a damn what hand a player throws the ball with. I mean, Rizky, I think he's holding lefties under 200 this year.
Yeah.
And again, that's another reason I think he kind of fits into that Polite mold, because if I remember, just deep into the season last year, Polite and Jinx were holding lefties under 200. And I mean...
And that's the truth, too.
I mean, righties would be hitting Polite better last year, and he's still succeeded, but you'd see Polite brought in... go up against righties when he'd be getting lefties out even more of the time.
And a perfect example coming from the other side is Neil Katz. What was he saying the other day, where he felt more comfortable facing some right-handers?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to whether he can get a guy out or not. It really doesn't matter, and I think that's part of the reason why you never saw Lopez brought up. I mean, even though Ozzie likes to play the matchups, he understood that he didn't need another guy to get lefties out.
Yeah, the only time I think a lefty really comes in handy, obviously the guy's got to have some stuff and he's got to be able to throw strikes, but let's say you're facing a guy like Hank Blalock, who is just atrocious against left-handed pitchers, then that makes sense. You know, you want to bring in a guy, a lefty, because no matter who it is, a certain left-handed batters or switch hitters are going to struggle big time against him. But really, there's not many guys out there to where you need, you know, 2-3 lefties in that bullpen. But the two lefties do have Neil Katz. He's been coming around, and Matt Thornton, who just flat-out throws heat.
Easy heat. That's what I like to do it, because you look at that guy's motion, if you never saw a radar gun, you're thinking, there's no way he's getting it out there faster than maybe 91, 92 miles per hour. Then you see a 97 flash up on the screen, and it's just wow. And you've got to think the batters are thinking the same thing, because with that motion, it just comes out so easy and fluid, and then that ball just blasts up to the plate.
Yeah, he definitely has some power. And really, if you... I would even say, when you watch him and Katz... Their fastball seems a lot quicker.
Well, yeah, and that's always been the thing about Neil Katz.
Yeah.
It's his curveball and his changeup. They just set up his fastball and make it look 3-4 miles an hour faster than it really is. And that's the thing about the lefties on the Sox team. You have to think with Burley and Katz and even Thornton, their motion, that lends itself to the ball maybe looking faster than it really is. And well, I guess in Thornton's case, it is that fast.
Now, going back to the back end of the bullpen, with Cliff Polite, I know Jason has said a couple times now that he sucks and he's done with and he's over. Do you think Polite can come back from this injury, if there even was an injury, come back and be an effective reliever, even if it's as a 6-7 guy to the bullpen?
Well, I think Cliff Polite would be a fantastic for just about any team to have as their sixth reliever out of the bullpen. I'm totally expecting Montero to get sent down once Polite gets activated. And I believe Polite has a minor league rehab stint tonight, and then he's going to have an off night tomorrow and then pitch two consecutive nights down in Charlotte. So that's going to be interesting to see. So keep your eyes on that to see how he does down in Charlotte. But I think if it really is an injury, yes, he'll come back to being a productive member of the bullpen. His ERA is not going to drop like a rock simply because, you know, he's got a bad start with the +7 ERA and all. But I think if you can get a 4-5 ERA out of him for the rest of the year, that's not horrible for your last spot in the bullpen.
Yeah, and if Thornton continues to develop like he is, if McCarthy kind of evolves into that setup role, you have Risk, who's a solid reliever. And, you know, like you said, if Polite could get a 4.5 ERA, you have a deep bullpen similar to what they had last year with guys like Vizcaino and Marte. So I would actually be pretty comfortable with them. But even with that, do you think that they still will need to make a trade come July for that extra reliever? Will a Bobby Jenks be able to hold up? You know, Neil Cott, Thornton, Risky. Will they be able to be enough?
Will they need to? You know, I don't think they'll need to. But then again, with Kenny Williams, you never know. I mean, you never see half the moves he makes coming. I mean, who thought Joe Borchard would ultimately turn into a guy in Matt Thornton who's being used as a left-handed setup man?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about this team, and especially trades they make. They're really hard to get a read on, and I mean, that's why we're here, to just talk about this sort of stuff and, you know, just kind of BS that we seem to know what's going on. But as far as Kenny Williams and any moves he might make, I've got some thoughts on that. And, you know, I thought if Brian Anderson kept struggling that he might try and acquire a center fielder. And, you know, my guess with my dad being a Dodger fan is he might try and acquire one of the glut of outfielders that the Dodgers have, because they've certainly got extra guys in the outfield with guys like Kemp and Ethier breaking out. But, you know, it's just really hard to get a read on what he's done. And, I mean, his blockbuster move last year was Jeff Blum. And that one certainly turned out well. I mean, I think the minor leaguer Ryan Moe was certainly worth a home run in a Game 3 of the World Series. But you just really never know.
Do you think this bullpen could hold up then for the stretch?
I think they could. I mean, last year we did a really nice job of avoiding any injuries and anything. So, you know, we might have an injury, but, you know, we're getting to this later. But I think Sean Tracy's actually going to be a solid arm out of the bullpen. And Montero hasn't sucked, which, you know, is better than I expected out of him. So they could stand pat with what they have. They could acquire another reliever if they don't think a guy like Polite's going to get it done, if they wanted to go out and get a guy like Brad Lidge. But they can go with what they've got, but you just never really know with Kenny Williams.
Well, yeah, and I think a big thing is going to be if the rotation can actually hold up. But, you know, you were talking about Tracy. He was sent down, which when he was sent down, or at least the rumors that he was going to be sent down, a lot of people were stemming it from the little beanball incident where he didn't, where he wasn't able to hit Hank, I think it was Hank Blaylock, and Gein was just berating him on the bench, screaming at him, you know, swearing at him, whatever. He gets sent down. I know myself, I thought that it was as a result of that, but then you look at the Risky trade, and it doesn't seem like that. It seems like maybe Tracy was set to go down altogether. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
I mean, I'm kind of conflicted on this. I mean, I can understand that Tracy would be disappointed if he's going to be sent down. But, you know, if that's really the case and he was being told he was sent down because of the Risky trade, that was a hell of a reaction from him. I mean, these guys are professionals, and I think he'd be able to handle it if he was sent down because they traded for Risky. I think, and I know Jason's interviewed him, that he's a pretty easygoing guy. And for him to pull his jersey over his head like that, something really had to have gotten to him. And I don't know if he's actually being told he was sent down or anything right there, even probably after the game, but that I think Ozzie Guillen went over the top on that reaction.
Yeah, no, the reaction was pathetic. I mean, it was really a sad reaction, and I lost some respect for Guillen when he did that. Now, maybe Guillen was just screaming at the team in general, and who knows? We don't know. You know, the players aren't obviously going to say anything, but I thought it was a shitty way to handle it nonetheless. Do you think, though, that maybe Montero was the guy who was going to be sent down? Do you think that was a possibility when Montero was sent down, and then after the incident he said, you know what, Montero, you're staying, Tracy, you're done?
I think it's a possibility. And again, you know how you're talking about, there's a shot of him in the dugout of just Guillen going berserk, throwing his water bottle down and walking around yelling. Thing is, there's nobody in the dugout. The team's out in the field, and there's no, all you see is, you know, he's looking back to where Tracy was in the
That's a good point. That's a real good point.
I mean, there's guys standing up at the fence or whatever you call it, watching the game action. There weren't that many people on the bench, and Guillen was clearly looking in Tracy's direction.
Maybe he was yelling at Glode. Maybe Glode did something wrong.
Glode did anything? I mean, I'm just happy to see him getting games at this point.
I am a Glode fan, and it's very, very nice to see him. Even though he's playing in blowouts, he is getting some hits, so it's nice to see him get some PT.
It was nice to see him once the game was out of hand yesterday that he was in for Jim Thome. I don't want Jim Thome playing any more innings in the field than he has to.
You think there's a big risk that goes with that?
Well, you just never know. It's he's that valuable to our team that it's a piece I'd rather just play it safe with. I mean, he's clearly dropped off later, and I honestly thought sometimes sitting for Jim Thome wouldn't be bad. I mean, he's not a guy that you need to sit, but it's just a little break. I mean, he is coming back from a pretty big injury, so...
I was actually concerned earlier this year when it seemed like the first 40 games he would not sit at all. And I was kind of concerned, you know, you have a guy like Glode, and not to say Glode is anywhere near a Thome, but you have a guy like Glode, you have a guy like Konerko who's playing every day. I would have thought earlier this year that maybe they would have, you know, snuck in Glode at first base once in a while, give Thome a break, especially, you know, to keep him healthy, you know, for the duration of the season into the stretch run.
Yeah, but therein lies the catch. You've got to crack into manager Asgain's brain, and that's not exactly an easy thing to do. His reasoning for a lot of the stuff he does is just beyond me. He brought us a World Series, and I'm still not quite sure how he did it.
So are you questioning his managerial skills in general?
No. It's just he makes some rather curious moves because, you know...
He goes with his gut a lot.
Yeah, a little too much. I mean, it still comes back to me, the Boone Logan versus Travis Hafner. Moves like that. It's just sometimes he makes... moves that are rather questionable, and a lot of it is, you know, like when he wants to play the matchups, especially lefty righty out of the bullpen. I mean, if you've got someone who can get guys out, and especially the other night when we saw the double switch with Jinx and Makoviak,
that had me thinking a little bit. Unless he felt that there was a possibility Jinx was going to blow the game, and as a result of that, he wanted to make sure that, you know, he had a guy, you know, batting. But even then, if Jinx would have blown the game.
Then, I want another inning out of him.
What's that?
I wouldn't have wanted another
inning exactly.
out of him if he blew the game.
No, that move did question me. As far as the whole Boone Logan thing or just any move in general, if you're a manager and you feel that there's a certain guy in your bullpen who you're going to need for the stretch run, he's going to have to come through for you in order for you to succeed, then even though it may not make sense at the time, it does, from a long-term standpoint, it does make sense to get that guy work and see what he could do, you know, if that's your only choice. It kind of goes back to, you know, guys like Marte last year. You know, as much as Marte may have struggled, you needed him to be effective, so you get him in those situations. If he screws up, you know, that's kind of what you have, and you have to kind of hope that he gets it going.
Yeah, and I guess I understand situations like that, but you're also trying to win games, and especially against divisional foes like Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland hadn't totally dropped off the face of the earth at that point. And, I don't even really remember the score situation in that game or whatever, but you need to bring your best against division foes.
You're right. I would agree with that.
I mean, and you look right now, Detroit's leading this division, and I think they're 15-3 against the bottom two teams in the division in Kansas City and Cleveland, and the White Sox are something like 11-10. And if you want to win the division, and I know we're in fantastic shape right now, but if you want to win the division and get in the playoffs, you have to win the games against those teams. And I'm guessing I'm kind of going off on a tangent there, but...
But overall, they're in pretty good shape. They're only, a game and a half out. You were bringing up before the show that they're only about, three games off last year's pace. And I'm not even looking at the standings at this point. I think the fact is that right now the Sox would make the playoffs, and in order for them not to, I think they're, four or five games up on the next team?
They're five games up on the Yankees in the wild card.
Yeah,
race,
so...
Bringing that up in June.
Really, even forget that. Forget the whole five. I think they're, they're probably three or four games up on the first-place teams in the other divisions anyway.
I looked earlier, and they've got the second-best record in baseball. Yeah. They're just ahead of the Mets.
Yeah, so I'm not really worried about the record so much. I think, you know, if both teams keep on playing, they're going to be playing each other enough this year, and the Sox have proven so far through six games against the Tigers that they're able to go in and beat them head-to-head. So I think as long as they just stay in it, they might be able to pull away with it in the end. But, you know, this stretch, and I said this a few weeks ago, there was a stretch starting with the Oakland series. I believe it was the 22nd in May. Starting with that series, it was a stretch of Oakland, Toronto, Cleveland, Texas. You know, I think it was Detroit, Cleveland, Texas, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Houston. It was this long stretch of games where they were going to be playing, you know, quality teams. And even though the Indians had fell off, at the time they were still a team to be reckoned with in a way. Now they're finishing off with the Cardinals coming into town for the next three games, then the Astros, and then after that they go back to playing the Pittsburgh and Cubs. But I'm kind of running off here. They've actually done very, very well, I think, against some of the better teams over the last month.
And there's a poster on Sox Tech who had said this before and everything. And I mean, you know, the White Sox, they've got to be frustrated. They've got the second best record in baseball, and they're still in a game and a half back of the Tigers. How do you think you feel if you're the Detroit Tigers? You're just beating up on the Cubs. They are kicking everybody's ass, and they cannot shake the White Sox.
Yeah.
The White Sox, who are playing teams like Cincinnati and Texas, teams that are leading the division. I mean, Texas isn't anymore since Oakland's on that ridiculous 10-game win streak, and St. Louis has caught up with Cincinnati. But it has to be frustrating as hell to be playing as well as they are, and they cannot shake the White Sox, and they're right there.
Especially when you're a team that's new to this. You know, you haven't done this in a long time. This is a whole new thing for you. You need to win as many of the games early in the season and try to get a big lead early, because you know, come September, like the Sox last year, you might fall off a little bit, and you want to have that leeway. You want to have that room to make mistakes so you could get into the playoffs, and then anything could happen from then on out.
And, I mean, it's another thing that's got to be scary for the Tigers. They are hitting on all cylinders. I mean, what, 8 home runs yesterday against the Cubs? You've got guys like Verlander and Muroth before he was hurt, and Bonderman just pitching out of their heads. And the White Sox, you know, are just kind of, you know, walking along, doing their thing. And up until this last couple of series, they haven't. The White Sox haven't been anything exceptional. No. And I know you felt that way, and Jason's felt that way.
Yeah.
And if and when the Tigers fall off, I mean, if the White Sox even just keep playing like they are, it's the White Sox division.
I would agree. I would definitely agree with that. That's why, you know, I'm not really too big on where the Sox stand right now. And I think this week, if there's been any week throughout the course of the year where they've looked close to last year, it's been this past week. And even so, I still don't think that they're playing at full potential right now, especially since the bullpen, you know, with Risky, maybe if the bullpen gets in order and Garland kind of figures things out, and hopefully Garcia could get his head out of his ass and he could start doing something. You have a team that's even better than last year and can go on a nice little run.
Well, just a bit of a question. Where would you like to see the wild card come out of? I mean, say the Sox win the division. Would you prefer to have a team like Detroit in the playoffs as opposed to a Red Sox or Yankees?
I would like to see any team in the AL Central would like to see it, and not just from a matchup standpoint, you know, hoping that, you know, the Tigers are a weaker team, so if the Sox do that, if the Sox somehow get past the first round, you know, they would have a better chance of, you know, beating the Tigers over the Yankees or Red Sox. Not necessarily for that, but this AL Central has been beaten down and criticized for so many years now.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see two playoff teams come from this division. And it's not even about hating the Red Sox or hating the Yankees. It's just about the American League Central getting some respect, especially now with the Twins coming along and winning their last 7 games, I think.
Yeah, they're starting to get to the point where they are making me feel a little bit uneasy with Johan and Mariano going off.
Yeah, from a baseball standpoint, that's good. As a Sox fan, no, you're kind of uneasy. You want to see the Tigers fall off. You want to see the Sox run away with the division, so Sox fans don't have to, you know, pull their hair out in September. But from a baseball standpoint, you have to love it. Yeah. You got to want that race.
I mean, I'd personally prefer every team play like the Royals, and the White Sox just coasted to it. But I mean.
But as a baseball fan, would you want that?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy seeing little guys succeed. And, I mean, you look at the AL East and you've got Toronto, who's, what, 2 games out of it right now. And, I mean, guys were looking at being improved before the season. But wouldn't it be something if the AL playoff teams were Toronto, the White Sox, the Tigers, and Oakland this year?
Or even the Rangers. I mean, because the Rangers have been a quiet team over the past few years.
Until we kick their ass.
that would be awesome, though. That would be great.
Fox would hate it, but I mean, it'd be enjoyable for a pure baseball fan.
And you know, that's what the World Series last year. Last year's World Series was enjoyable from a pure baseball standpoint. If you're a baseball fan, you had to love it.
I grew up in Little League. I played second base, and I always idolized Craig Biggio, of all people.
Him I felt
and Jeff
bad.
Bagwell.
I felt and, really yeah, bad.
I mean, I'm glad the White Sox won the World Series, but I felt honestly bad. You know, I was happy when Jinx struck out Bagwell in that clutch time in the World Series, of course, but I felt bad for them, and I always hope that if the White Sox don't win the World Series, it's the Astros, to be honest.
And I would be happy with that. That would be fine with me.
Did you hear Mike and Mike a couple weeks ago when you had David Wells throwing Craig Biggio under the steroid bandwagon? I mean, ooh, honestly.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, come on. I mean, really, these, especially Biggio and Bagwell, even though Bagwell doesn't have any shoulders left, I think, but you've got a feel for those guys. And again, I'm hoping this year if the White Sox can't win it, it's the Houston Astros of all teams.
Well, the only reason I wouldn't want them to win it is because of Roger Clemens. I don't like him at all. So the fact is right now they're about 500. I think they're around a 500 team. He's going to come back. I think he's facing the Twins this week. He's facing Liriano. So if he gets going and he's the reason for them making the playoffs and winning the World Series, I wouldn't like that. So,
although I'm happy when – I'm purely happy when anyone can beat Liriano and Santana from that Minnesota team.
You know what? But you know what? Going back to the Twins, if Liriano could keep up what he's doing, and Santana goes on another one of his 15-0 runs, like he seems to do every single year, that Minnesota
Jose Contreras-like run.
Yes,
you can just call it that.
Yeah, and that's going to be a scary team, and maybe not even from a playoff standpoint, but just late in the season, they might be pissing a lot of teams off who are in contention.
That's the sort of team historically you just saw giving the White Sox fits. And I mean, that's why it's so frustrating to see, because just for years and years, those Twins teams, it just boggled me how they beat the White Sox sometimes, but they went ahead and did it with guys with good pitching matchups, to be honest. And if they can put another solid arm in that rotation, and it depends if they're willing to spend the money up there, they could be a contender even next year, I think. A lot of it comes down to their offense and whether they can actually get something going, because you aren't going to win any division championship with Rondo White and Tony Bautista, but I think those guys are gone now, so things are definitely looking up in Minneapolis, and I get to go up and see him at the end of this month play the Dodgers in a series, and I think I get to see Liriano one of those starts. And possibly the most interesting thing about that series is I'll see a guy from the Dodgers by the name of Jonathan Broxton who might be able to out-eat Bobby Jinks.
I think he
weighs 285.
Wow, that's a big guy.
Yes, it is.
I actually got to take a look at this guy then.
Yeah, he doesn't have too bad of numbers either. And again, with my dad being a Dodgers fan, I've been following him a bit lately. And, you know, with the White Sox and their inability to have a lot of the prospects come up and produce, the Dodgers have just been bringing up guy after guy. You see Willie Ibar, you see Andre Ethier, and you see Matt Kemp, a guy who was in Double-A earlier this year. And it's just ridiculous to see them bring up that many guys who've been producing.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the show. I thought it went fairly well.
So do I, and I'd be remiss from Jason, and I'm sure he'd verbally berate me if I didn't mention his sites, TalkBulls.com, TalkBears.com, and TalkBeehawks.com for the finest in Bulls, Bears, and Blackhawks talk. I mean, I'm a White Sox fan, and I personally hate all three teams, but, you know, I'm going to be a nice guy, and I'm going to pub the sites
for
him.
You know what? You did a better job than him.
Well, is that really that difficult?
I don't know. Well, the one advantage of having Jason is that you get his classical...
He's got some great one-liners.
U.S. scores! Oh, wait, no.
Son of a bitch is the checks. And then with referring to every guy in the bullpen earlier this year as a bum, I'm pretty sure Augustin Montero is still a bum.
Yeah. I'm sure he made a lot of friends in the Sox bullpen if they actually listened to the shows. All right, well, Alex, so thanks for being on. You might actually be here next week, whether in place of Jason or me, perhaps. Who knows? I might not even be able to do the show next week, so maybe it'll just be you and Jason. Maybe we'll just try it out. Maybe we'll try out the combinations and see. You know, we've had a lot of work with just me and Jason, so now today, which is me and you, next week is just you and Jason, and we'll see what's the best combination.
I don't know. Jason's a lefty, and I'm a righty, so we can play those lefty-righty matchups out on the Sox Talk podcast.
I gotcha. Yeah. Or maybe there won't be a combination. Maybe you'll just take it over completely.
Yeah, I do hate those lefty-righty matchups anyway. So.
And it'll be you. We'll get Ed Farmer in, and it'll be you and Ed Farmer.
I wouldn't advertise listening in that week because I would not get a word in edgewise.
All right, Alex, well, thanks for listening. I had fun. Yep.
So did I.
All right, well, we'll see you next week, or somebody will see you next week. There will be a show next week, so make sure you tune in. Check out SockSock.com. Of course, that's where you are right now, chances are. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Yep. See ya.